Welcome to this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. Today we are going to be talking about Asian genres of music. I know that kind of sounds a little bit random, but we've been kind of discussing this over the last couple of days, and the fact that there is kind of a black hole there from Asia as far as music and the way the genres of music have worked. We've been really struggling with, why is there such a hole there? Why has there not been anything come out that just, you know, hits the charts and gets everybody excited?
Well, actually, if we're being honest, the reason we came up with this topic is because the Shepherd and I were actually trying to see if our phones were truly listening to us.
True.
So we came up with something, a phrase that would be absolutely ridiculous that we could guarantee it wasn't coincidence if we started getting hit with targeted ads.
And before we disclose what that phrase was, we've been doing this now for 5 days, I think.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Four to 5 days, we have been having conversations both over the phone, over text messages, amongst ourselves, just trying to get our phones to pick up on a certain phrase to then see if we can get some advertising, something to click with the internet. And we failed. We tried our best. We did as good as we can do. We said everything we could say. We phrased everything we could phrase it certain ways. We would turn our phones off. We would put them in a different room. We would then have a conversation. We'd say, okay, well, let's try this. We'd turn our phones back on, and we did everything we could, and we failed.
Well, it's actually getting a bit frustrating because I think we used the phrase that many times that we somehow convinced ourselves we were genuinely interested in the topic, and now Yes. We just want to buy a t-shirt we can't find one anywhere.
I'm also pretty sure that I've invented this genre in my head, because I'm pretty sure I had a dream that I was listening to this music that doesn't even exist because we've been talking about it so much. We basically fooled ourselves. We have destroyed our psyche as far as this genre is concerned. So tell all the listeners, what is this magical new genre that we've been talking about?
Well, first of all, I want it to be known that we created this musical genre.
Yes.
It does not...
Trademark, copyright, that good stuff. We own this.
Yeah. So don't dare try and steal this from us, mainly because we don't have any money to take you to court, and you'll probably just get away with it.
And then if you did sue us or whatever, we're going to get bored of that in like 15 seconds and let you have it.
Yeah.
But we probably shouldn't let that out.
Okay. All right.
But
can we edit that out later?
No, we're too lazy to edit anything.
Oh, we don't have any editing software,
right? Yeah, we don't.
Okay. Well, anyway, so yeah, the phrase we came up with, which we figured would be almost impossible to accidentally say, was gay Asian disco.
Gay Asian disco.
Now I know at the mention of that phrase, people are trying to, maybe subliminally in their brain, trying to come up with a soundtrack which would fit that style of music, but it's almost impossible.
Right. And of course, by the way, we should mention that both of our phones are on right now.
Yeah.
And we're, of course, recording this into a computer. So all the mentions we're doing are continuing to add to the fact that are the computers listening to us, or our phones listening to us? Even though we've been doing this over the past 4 or 5 days, this is just more added, talk. More added opportunities for us to get some kind of ad as to, we want to buy gay Asian music or gay Asian disco music.
Yeah.
Download it to our phones, whatever. And we've come up short.
Well, I just want a free t-shirt, to be honest. But I think by the time this goes on the Google...
Would the t-shirt fit you?
I'm not sure, actually. Not the way I've been eating recently since the COVID lockdown. But I was kind of figuring that once this gets uploaded to the Google podcasts, that on Google Marketplace, there'll probably be about 24 stores selling these T-shirts within like 24 hours.
So once again, we're missing out on a money-making opportunity like we typically do. But yep. That's neither here nor there.
Well, I mean, I did actually look on Google. I did my, you know, due diligence, did my research, and I looked on the whole first page. I scrolled all the way down to those numbers before I closed the browser.
No, you're lying a little bit, because you actually did a lot more research on this topic than you've done on any other topic. So don't lie. You went to page 12 on Google.
Well,
you were that bored.
Well, I actually clicked on the image search part on Google because I wanted to find some funny photos. But there was just, I could literally almost find nothing. And you know, given there's like 4.5 billion Asians, or people who classify as Asians, in the world, and that's roughly about, I think, 60% of the world's population.
That sounds right.
There was just nothing there. And so I thought, this is an untapped market. And so I kind of felt like Thomas Edison, you know, when he was sitting in the bath and had that eureka moment that he didn't have to poop in the dark.
Yeah. Or what was it? Newton that was sitting under the apple tree. The apple fell on his head. I mean,
him? Was that him who said eureka? I thought it was Thomas Edison in the bath. Or am I getting my people mixed up?
I don't remember who
and
it is.
And once again, so Tesla's not getting any credit. Again.
Right. So basically, this is one of those discoveries that 100 years from now, there's going to be a history book written, and it's going to be Thomas Edison with electricity. It's going to be Isaac Newton with gravity, and it's going to be the wolf and the shepherd with gay Asian disco.
Yeah. I think we'll actually make more money than Thomas Edison did, though.
Yeah, I think he kind of died poor, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah. Another rabbit hole to discuss, but let's get back on topic.
Well, actually, on the first page of the Google results, and remember, I actually typed in gay Asian disco, and I did it in parentheses, you know, to make sure it actually had the whole phrase, like in a linear fashion rather than just the individual words. But on that first page, two of the results I got was that Asian Americans are viewed as more American if they are gay, which is kind of crazy because, you know, they told me to sound more Texan. I had to use the word y'all, but it sounds like they're putting a little bit too much pressure on Asian Americans to blend in.
And let's be honest, here's the problem with you saying y'all. You don't say y'all like I say y'all. It sounds a little funny coming out of your mouth. Even though you've been in Texas for a while, you still don't have that Texan y'all. It sounds like you're trying to pretend like you're trying to fit in or whatever by saying the word y'all. So there is that.
But mind you, I'm kind of thinking that the sweatshops in China making all those LeBron James jerseys could actually, if we invent this genre, they can play that gay Asian disco genre doing the 18-hour shifts for motivation. Because let's be honest, you know, if you're earning 28 cents a day and getting beatings for misspelling Lakers as Rakers, that's not putting a smile on any worker's face.
No, it's not.
Especially not those six-year-old kids working in there.
Yeah, that would be terrible. But maybe they decide to stop making the jerseys and then turn around and maybe they could find the next gay Asian disco star that is sitting there right in the sweatshops. Kind of like an American Idol kind of competition. But instead of that, it's more of a gay Asian disco idol competition.
Do you think there'd be like Asia's Got Gay Talent show?
Yes.
On TV.
Yeah, there you go. Why not? Yeah. Why not? Why not do something like that?
I can work. I mean, I think, I started messing around with one of the apps I have on my iPhone, which allows you to create music. And it's more kind of rave and dance music. But I found out, you know, if you do a few sound samples and speed it up like about 6 times more than normal, I think we've kind of hit the sweet spot for the genre, really. So I'm going to knock up a full album, I think, you know, across this week, and it'll be ready for a release like pretty soon.
The struggle you're going to have with that, though, is your singing voice. And I know you think you have...
voice this, of an angel?
Yeah, this wonderful singing voice, but it would better be used to torture terrorism suspects rather than, you know, let people enjoy listening to your voice. So you would have to find a singer somewhere.
Have you heard Japanese people try and sing karaoke?
I have, actually. Right. Well, yeah. No, you know what? That was a little bit stereotypical. I have heard Korean people
sing
karaoke. Because Koreans, love karaoke. Oh, they love karaoke.
Their music scene is terrible, but they can sing, and that's the irony. You know, they have really good voices, whereas the Japanese don't necessarily. But the Koreans do have great voices, but just have terrible music.
Yeah, if you look at the genres of like singer-songwriter, there's not too much singer-songwriter over in Asia. It's singer and no songwriter, because there's no good music for them to actually sing to. Well, I totally get that.
Well, I figured if we can't reach an audience of 4.5 billion Asians when, polka music is both mine and yours in our like top three genres of music. There was actually a song called Gay Drifter Polka by Fat Louis Sikowski and the Big Polka Band.
Hmm.
So, I mean, if there's room in the music market for that, I think there's room for us in this new genre of music.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially if we're getting drilled down that close with specific genres. There definitely is room for gay Asian disco.
We are going to...
I think we can make this happen.
Well, we can set up a channel on Spotify as long as they don't want to be banned in the Asian Pacific, right?
You know, that's going to get difficult. That's going to require a little bit of research. I don't know if we're actually going to want to do that much research, but I think maybe we would have a listener out there that might be able to grab a hold of this, and we just get the royalties off of it.
Right.
I mean, that's the beautiful thing about royalties, right? I mean, that's the captain of laziness as far as making money, right? You just sit back and everybody else is doing the work and you just collect a check. So I like the way this is going. So we need somebody to do that.
Now, you know, this is a little bit kind of tongue-in-cheek, obviously, this topic. That doesn't mean we're not actually going to record some songs and actually create a musical channel.
We are
going to do it.
Please don't confuse me. I thought we were actually doing this.
I'm saying the topic is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but that doesn't mean we're not going to try and make some
money
off it.
Okay.
We are going to try money off
stop,
it.
Stop yeah. trying to confuse yeah. me.
So if there's any sponsors out there, we would like free sake for life. And some better quality sushi than the shepherd gets from QT on the way into work each day.
Hey, you know what? It's not that bad. It's really not that bad.
But one of the packets she bought had a sell-by date before we'd even heard of COVID-19.
Yeah, but I can't read that stuff. That takes too much effort.
But you know what? When you leave that stuff out in the sun, it tastes great after a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I lost 19 pounds in 4 hours after eating it. So.
Yeah, that, hey, you know, now, once again, if we're looking at sponsors, that's a good diet plan.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead and eat some bad food. Yeah. Eat some gas station sushi, and you will lose some weight.
Right. Now, talking about genres and perhaps genres which maybe should have, you would have thought that they would have happened. And like I said, I don't think there's been outside of K-pop, which really isn't an Asian musical genre, because I think it was the Western world who gave it that label. Are there any genres, you know, that you've found hard to believe that there's an audience for? I mean, I know we made the comment about polka, and particularly that song, which I think might be the first song I've paid for on iTunes in years, but I might download that one later. I think the big problem has been the rise of kids' music, and kids are kind of told what to listen to as opposed to discovering music for themselves.
Well, a lot of that comes from the whole influencer crowd, right? Because this person with, you know, 5 million followers listens to this song, then everybody listens to this song. It was the same with, and even this still happens today with FM radio, right? You hear a song over and over and over and over and over again, and all of a sudden you say to yourself, well, I actually like this song. Well, did you really like this song, or did you just hear it so many times over and over again that you decided that, yeah, I like this song? Are you being fooled into that? I think there's a lot of that. It's that old payola. It's, you know, just repeating something constantly, and then next thing you know, somebody likes it.
Well, I mean, I did actually text a couple of my friends who are playing casually in bands in the local kind of bar circuit, or were before, you know, obviously
the whole COVID thing.
COVID thing hit. And I asked them why they think the music scene is, or has been, a little bit stale and not really developed too much, you know, over the last decade. And you know, one of them replied and said, I blame Auntie Nora for being a basic bitch and giving Jessica an iTunes gift card for every holiday, because that gives the tweens too much power to decide, you know, what really sells.
Sure. And of course, you know, if you've got, you know, some kid, right, like you say, a tween or even a teen, right, and they get this iTunes gift card, a lot of them don't even know exactly what they want to download. So what do? They ask their friends, or they go on social media and they try to figure out what is good music.
Right.
And you can manipulate that. You've got one popular friend that's got, you know, tons of real friends and friends on social media, and they say, this is a great song. Then you kind of force yourself into believing that, hey, this is a good song, and so I'm going to go ahead and buy it.
Yeah.
It happens all the time.
Well, I mean, before, well, actually, not before, but, you know, younger kids tend to watch and listen to most of their music on YouTube now before they get into that position where Auntie Nora does give them those iTunes gift cards. Sure. But if you had to guess, what would you think would be the highest played music video on YouTube in history?
Well, before we go to that, let me ask you this. Remember, MTV used to actually, you know, put video to music. And that became something that was looked after, sought after by everybody. It wasn't just about hearing the song. They had to see that visual. And then, of course, MTV went south and they started doing reality shows and all that. Then it all moved to YouTube. But at one point, it was all about the video. And there's plenty of what I honestly, in my opinion, think are great songs, but then I turn around and I say, was that really a good song, or was it really a good music video? And I think it's a great song. November Rain, let's be honest.
Right.
One of the greatest music videos ever done. Love that music video. Was that really a good song? I'm not really sure.
Right.
Tonight by Smashing Pumpkins. Liked the song before I even saw the music video. Great music video. Won lots of MTV music video awards, all that good stuff. Was it really that great of a song? If you would have went back in history before you had the music video, did music videos, did that visual change people's opinions about songs just because there was something visual to look at while you were listening to it?
Right.
But with all that said, what is the big one? What's going on right now? What is that song that, based off of YouTube views and all that good stuff, is that big hitter?
Okay, I'm going to give you a little bit of an intro here.
Jaws.
No. Baby Shark. close,
baby,
though.
Baby shark.
Baby shark. Baby shark has had 7 billion views on YouTube. Now, before the people who created Baby Shark get too carried away, I just want to let you know my son has autism, and I think he's responsible for about 9 million of those views.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I mean, he's the funny thing is like, you know, despite the fact he's mostly nonverbal, there was one point when he changed the kind of closed caption things on his iPad and we couldn't work out how to turn it off. And he actually started singing the song in Japanese for almost like a month until we figured out how to reset it.
Well, you know, was there something about the visual part of the video for Baby Shark, or was it just the audio? Was it just him listening to that song that got him attached to it?
Well, you have to think, I mean, if it had like 7 billion plays, there must be something in that song which is so catchy, which just hits the, you know, point in the brain for kids that they just want to keep playing that song. Because, I mean, we know there's not 7 billion kids in the world.
Right.
You know?
Well, I remember kind of going along these same lines. I remember being in the car with my in-laws back when, you know, before they were my in-laws. I was just dating my wife, and my mother-in-law had bought, what was the name of the band? I know the name of the song. The Wallflowers. Bought the Wallflowers CD and had the song One Headlight on there,
right.
And she put the CD in, and we listened to One Headlight, I think, at least 20 times on repeat.
Yeah.
And she just kept listening to the song, loved the song. So I think, once again, you keep spitting that out to people, and you keep forcing them to listen, and then eventually you either love it or you hate it.
But aren't your wife's parents from Mexico?
Yes.
So are you sure it wasn't like a mariachi cover band?
Oh, no.
It was actually the Wallflowers.
No, it wasn't. But my mother-in-law liked Bob Dylan, and then found out Jacob Dylan had this band.
Okay.
And that's where that came from.
Oh, wow.
And truly loved the song. I honestly thought on that record, I don't remember the name of the record, there was a song that Adam Duritz from Counting Crows sang backup on. I thought that was the better song on the record. And yeah, it got some radio play, but not as much as One Headlight.
Right.
But if I hear that song today, I will never forget driving around in their car, listening to that song on repeat. That's my memory of that song.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of strange how, you know, different countries adopt Western music for decades and decades and decades, and yet still don't really come up with maybe a genre which, you know, takes on in the rest of the world. Like, you know, there's been a lot of music, you know, from...
Let's think about it. You know, you've got Ireland, right? Mm. And so that's that... You know, pub drinking music. You think about those old Irish folk tunes, and you know, when St. Patrick's Day comes along, people want to sit there and sing along with those songs. And you've got different parts of the United States that they have certain genres. You've got West Coast music. You've got East Coast music.
Yeah.
People get attached to that, and it gets repeated.
Yeah,
but other than Ireland and some parts of Europe and then certain segments of the United States, and let's not forget about country. You know, you got Texas country, you got red dirt country, you got, you know, the pop country, you got all that. But once you get past that, you don't really think about anywhere else of providing that big genre of music.
Right. And... You know, I mean, you know, not to be stereotypical, but I think most of the authentic Asian music I've heard sounds more like my son when the batteries are running out on his electronic keyboards and he's trying to annoy me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I gotta admit, I'm not gonna disagree with you on that one.
But I mean, for a race which has provided us with some of the best food in the world, you know, super fast bullet trains which run on time and don't break down every 36 miles.
Huge fantastic technology.
Yeah. I just think they've put in a bit of a lackluster effort with music, and specifically the gay music scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're lacking there.
Yeah.
Especially with in once again, we could go down a big rabbit hole there, and let's try to avoid that. But they could put a little bit more effort there.
Yeah. I mean,
but is it because there's no money in it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they just figured they've provided so much good stuff to the rest of the world, which is true. I mean, like I said, with food and technology and all that. I mean, two of my favorite things in life, food and technology. But, you know, there are a lot of unexpected genres which have appeared out of nowhere in the Western world. I mean, if you go back to, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, when you had punk, new wave, new romantic. I mean, they pretty much came out of nowhere. Somewhat of a backlash to the glam rock thing that they wanted to be able to pick up a guitar and play.
Right, especially in the 80s, because you had that stadium rock, glam rock, we always called it hair bands.
Right.
There was such a backlash, and that's why in the early 90s, grunge rock appeared and alternative rock. You know, we don't want to hear these big, massive guitar solos and the guys standing up there on stage with the big, long hair with the hairspray that's all sprayed in their hair and looking like that. We want something different. But then all of a sudden that disappeared.
Yeah.
And now it's more the computerized music. Let's put you in a studio. Let's put some auto tune on you. We've got to make sure that you look good so we can put your picture on the album cover, or nowadays, and not even album cover anymore. And now we got to put your picture on the internet. We got to put your picture on a billboard. We got to sell you. We got to sell the way you look.
Yeah.
So we can sell records.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned electronic music, and really, you know, some of the indie music, the alternative music, which came out of England, bands like New Order, you know, really kind of pioneered a lot of that electronic music while still remaining good musicians. But then it kind of took a bit of a strange curve. I mean, when, you know, acid house music and rave music came out, which I think was basically, you know, somebody taking LSD while playing Pac-Man and thought, oh, you know what, I'm going to remix this about 90 different ways and then charge people $80 to stand in a wet field and dance to it with glow sticks. I mean, that kind of went on for about 2-3 years, but
yeah, but once again, why not? You know, we all got to feed ourselves, right? We all got to drink water, we all got to feed ourselves, we all got to put a roof over our head.
Yeah.
So they figured out a way to do this fairly easily.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, one in a million. I'm going to go with one in a million. It's a one in a million shot that you're going to create a song, you're going to create a band or whatever, and you're going to make it and you're going to pay the bills that way.
Yeah. Now, one of the funny things, or maybe ironic things, about certain genres is the audience that they're really aimed at in terms of where the companies make their money. And I mean, rap music in particular. And I mean, you know, for as long as that's now been kind of popular, or at least makes up a certain percentage, you know, the songs which are sold on iTunes, the songs which make, you know, maybe the Billboard charts, you know, the marketing is aimed towards kind of 10 through 12 year old white middle class girls. It's not aimed, you know, at black kids. It's not aimed at black teenagers, black adults. The marketing in terms of where those adverts appear for those albums and everything else is middle class, you know, preteen girls. And, you know, again, I think going back to, Auntie Nora and her penchant for, you know, not really making much effort in terms of birthday and Christmas ideas and giving out iTunes gift cards has led to this market of preteen girls having almost unrivaled power in the music industry now to actually drive that music.
Well, if you also look at the way songs are now, it's better for a song to be short. So going back to November Rain, I don't know how long that song is. I want to say it's like 7 minutes long. You know, it's a long song. Now it's all about the TikTok video.
Yeah.
It's all about getting that little snippet of 30 seconds or whatever of the hook of the song or the chorus of the song to go ahead and throw that out there so you can make a TikTok video or an Instagram Reels or, you know, whatever it is, versus sitting back and actually listening to the song, listening to the message of the song, and enjoying the song.
Well, I think it's a crazy thing, especially when you listen to a lot of, you know, hip-hop rap lyrics, and then examine the kind of market it's mostly aimed at in terms of its commercialization, where it's getting the money from. I mean, you're generally talking about an age group who, in between Baby Shark and eating Chick-fil-A, you know, are listening to this music, which is completely inappropriate, you know, for their age group. And they're watching videos with, you know, people twerking on it. And I mean, you know, I don't think it's appropriate for, you know, 10-year-old girls, I don't care what race you are or anything, watching these videos and seeing this stuff, and yet this music is deliberately marketed to them. I mean, we should probably contact Netflix. There's a documentary in there somewhere.
Probably so. And let's not forget, years ago, they didn't want to show Elvis Presley on TV.
Oh, with
because,
the gyrating hips thing?
When he shook his hips, that was something that wasn't able to be televised.
Yeah.
Now you have songs, and I don't even want to repeat the name, but I'm just going to say the initials, WAP.
Right, yeah.
And I've read the lyrics, I've watched the video, and I thought to myself, my God, if my parents heard me listening to that song and watching the video, everything would just crash down. But last year, we said, hey, we can't play the song Baby It's Cold Outside,
right?
Because there's an intonation about a man controlling a woman, and maybe some rape intonation, something like that.
They said it was a bit rapey.
Yeah. And then I hear the WAP song, and I'm thinking, wow, that song's okay, but Baby It's Cold Outside isn't. And I'm thinking about poor old Will Ferrell and Zooey Deschanel when they sang that song in Elf.
Right.
Obviously, if they'd have made Elf during this, they wouldn't have ever done that. And that was a funny scene with them singing that. And now you can't sing that song?
Right.
Wow.
Well, I mean, that song, the WAP song, I obviously know what those letters stand for. But before that song come out, I mean, I think we'd have had as much difficulty trying to find links to something describing that on the internet as we have with gay Asian disco. Because, to be honest, I mean, the phrase doesn't really make any sense.
No.
But it's just one of those things that it's controversial for, you know, controversy's sake. And that's how it kind of gets popular. You know, I mean, there was a popular meme which was circulating on the internet when they banned, you know, the Baby It's Cold Outside, and it had a radio producer or a DJ, whatever, saying, hey, sorry, we're not allowed to play Baby It's Cold Outside anymore, but is this next record, it's Cardi B inviting everybody to eat her butt.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah. It crazy.
Yeah. Crazy. I mean, it just goes... But what you think when we went back actually to our Smiths podcast and music go, we talked about whether music's pretty much dead in terms of creativity now because it's so overproduced and it's so over commercialized that there seems to be very little popular music or in terms of what sells that, you know, is actually artists driving it themselves. It's all people behind the scenes getting the people to perform the music, and that's how they make the money. It doesn't seem like there's that many real bands coming through on the mainstream anymore.
No, I totally agree. I think you're always going to have the bands that are still going to produce their music, they're going to be true underground, because if you look at how music is now, any genre outside of what's popular is truly driven underground.
Yeah.
And it, there used to always be the underground, and now I think it's more so underground than it has ever been. And it's kind of like drinking a beer. And used to, you would say, hey, have you ever tried this beer? And somebody would say, well, I've heard of it, but I haven't tried it. And now that you have all these different beers that are out there, it's hard to even ask, hey, have you tried this beer from this brewery in Podunk, Texas? Because everybody's making a beer.
Yeah.
Conversely, now you have all these bands that are truly forced underground. It's kind of that same thing that if you say, hey, have you heard this song by this band? Most people haven't even heard of the band, haven't heard of the song, but it's opening up a area that people can actually kind of focus on the artist. They can say, hey, I like what these guys are doing. I like their music that they're making. I will support them. I'll buy their vinyl. There's a band that I just bought their vinyl that is from New York. They're a ska band. And I accidentally found them, and I've been listening to them on Spotify. And once they released a vinyl, I said, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and buy this vinyl to support these guys. I don't know if they're ever going to come down to Texas and play a show, but I want to support them because I like their music.
Right. Well, I think the great thing now is there are so many different channels of distribution and ways for you to discover a band, because, I mean, before the internet, you would probably have never discovered that band. But, you know, getting rid of the record label as a middleman, taking out those costs, what it used to cost to put out a single, you know, it was very, very difficult to raise that money. But I think, you know, a lot of the new bands which come out, it really does have to be the old equivalent of the word of mouth. You know, you have to really seek out some of these bands. I think it's harder now with the saturation in the market, and it is so easy to make music and distribute music that, you know, getting your voice heard in the crowd, you have to be either very, very successful or be, sorry, not very successful, be maybe very lucky to get your success, or be very, very good. I mean, because you have to remember, we now have a market for the first time in history where the majority of the people who buy this music have ADHD and Adderall prices are through the roof. So, I mean, you know, the genre, not that you can really call much of the music nowadays in the Billboard, you know, 100 a genre, because it seems to be like you've heard one song, you've heard the next 30 songs, you know, in the charts.
Absolutely true.
Yeah.
Absolutely true.
Now you subscribe to Spotify, right?
I do.
So I thought first of all, you did it because you were sick of your daughter buying every release that Taylor Swift did, not because you actually wanted access to all the music.
So I have a family plan on Spotify. And the reason I did that was because my wife and my daughter kept spending money on songs on iTunes, whatever it is, 99 cents a song or whatever, knowing that after 3 months, they're not going to listen to that song. And they were trying to build their playlist, their library or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, wouldn't it be better if we just went ahead and had a Spotify account and had a family account, which is what we have. And then you can listen to whatever you want, whenever you want. You can download stuff to your phone if that's what you want. So you can play it offline and have every song you want versus paying 99 cents a song. And, you know, what, you get a $25 gift card from iTunes and you end up with 23 songs, let's say. And that's all you've got.
Yeah.
Why not go ahead and have access to a huge music library versus, you know, my CD folder and my wife's CD folder and my vinyl collection and everything else. I mean, I have the songs I want to listen to on, you know, CD or vinyl or whatever. But, of course, Spotify is so much more convenient.
Yeah.
I can listen to it on my computer. I can listen to it on my phone. Not the greatest quality, but, you know, unless you're having that moment where you just want to sit back and hear the quality and you just want some background noise.
Yeah. Now, I mean,
why not do it that way?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like iTunes and the Google Music services have been, you know, haven't really been around that long, but, you know, can you see services like Spotify and, you know, their competitors really kind of almost killing off iTunes and, you know, the Google Music thing, because obviously no longer you have to pay for an individual song or an album. You can pay one subscription a month for less than the cost of an album and access pretty much every song.
Well, of course, you know, iTunes shifted to Apple Music.
Yeah.
And that's what they're trying to focus everything on. Then you have Amazon Music, several of those options. You have Tidal, which is a great service. It's a little overpriced, but it's more for the audiophile because the quality is so much higher on that. But that's where we're going now.
Yeah.
It's all music on demand. We live in an on-demand world. We've talked on prior podcasts about going to Blockbuster and trying to rent a movie. And most people can't even imagine the fact that they can't click a button on their TV and watch a movie immediately.
Yeah.
And it's the same with music. They want what they want. They want it right now. And it's the same with music.
Right. Now you did mention, I can't remember which specific podcast it was, you mentioned about vinyl sales in the last 12, 18 months actually surpassed that of CDs.
It has. And I love the fact that vinyl has surpassed CDs. Never was a CD fan. Never was a cassette fan. I always thought once CDs came out, because I remember getting a CD in a CD player and then realizing I could also put that CD in my computer and play that CD. And I thought, well, why do I have to do this when I can connect my computer to the internet? Why do I need this disc? And I always thought there's going to be a digital version of this. It's going to take a while, but eventually it's going to happen. And here we are. And now it's happened.
Now, I haven't noticed, and this might sound like a really ignorant question, but do they still sell CDs in stores?
I don't know.
Because I'm not necessarily sure that it's because I either don't keep an eye out or I just never go to those sections anymore where they might sell music in stores like Walmart, Target, wherever.
I would have to say yes. And the only reason I say yes is because over the weekend, the wife and I went hunting for cheap Halloween candy because, of course, you know, once Halloween passes and all the candy companies put Halloween candy out, you know, they put a Halloween graphic or whatever on it. It's the same candy. It's just a different wrapper. Then we always go out and we try to buy the candy cheaper to give to the kids. And as we were going through the store, we were at Target, which is one of our Sunday Sevens.
Super Target or just regular Target?
Regular Target. Okay. No, we went to a regular Target. Right. I walked by a display of DVDs, and I thought, okay, well, they're still selling movies on DVD. They probably still have CDs.
Right.
But I didn't go into the music section and actually look.
Right.
So I think they're still out there. I think they are.
Yeah. Now I can understand that, you know, with movies that were produced and they either overpressed a certain number of copies of movies, you know, these old movies, which is why, you know, they appear in bargain buckets and stuff. Because it's like, yeah, we still have, you know, 19 million copies of this movie. which didn't sell, so they stick them in bargain buckets, you know, just as a kind of stop loss, whatever, and like, let's try and sell it. But I don't understand now, you know, especially, well, maybe in the United States or the UK, why anybody would, you know, or a record company, not a specific individual band, would make that effort to actually get something released on CD and have that extra cost in terms of manufacturing, distribution, when obviously electronic, you know, methods of, you know, receiving that music, you know, is the way to go. Because, I mean, why would you have that overhead and lose money when you can just sell it electronically?
Right. Because, it you know, totally makes no sense to me, especially with books being print on demand. You could argue the fact that if somebody loved a movie enough and they wanted a DVD, that you could create that on demand and ship it to them.
Right.
Not quite sure why anybody would want to, but you know, maybe they would. I think we're not quite 100% digital yet, so that's why you still have that floating out there, because a movie is a little bit different than music. So you're not going to have, obviously, a vinyl record of a movie, because listening to vinyl with music is a whole experience.
Yeah.
It's all about that experience.
But, I mean, it's moved to the point where even the older generations are getting more and more educated on how they can get digital downloads. So, I mean, like, you know, if you take your dad as an example, I mean, you know, he's somebody who still, his idea of a barbecue is going in a field at night and hitting a cow over the head with a spade and setting fire to it, and that's barbecue. But
but after he does that, he also goes inside and brings Netflix. Up Hulu or Hulu, Netflix and watches TV.
So I mean, that's why I find it so hard to understand why these mediums still exist. You know, DVD, CD. Well, actually, like I said, I can understand with DVD to a point, because they printed too many and they're just trying to sell them. And, you know, for whatever reason, their accountant didn't do a good job of being able to write them off as a loss. But with new music which comes out, you know, CDs, I mean, unless you own a car from, like, you know, what, the end of the 80s, I don't understand what medium you'd even conveniently play those on anymore.
Yeah. I remember way back in the day installing a 6-disc CD changer in the trunk of my car, thinking that was amazing that I could put 6 CDs in the trunk of the car. And then I could control that from my radio, and I could actually have 6 CDs. And then, of course, you know, fast forward, we had a 6 CD changer in the dash of one of our cars, and we thought that was great. And now we just Bluetooth our phone into it and stream from Spotify.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't, you know, bought a song or an album in, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years, and that's mainly because, you know, the BitTorrent platforms kind of forced me against my will to download music for free. But outside of services like Spotify, iHeartRadio, and the other ones you mentioned early, I'm not sure I could justify spending that money now, because if I wanted an album, I'd be stupid not to sign up for Spotify for a month's free trial whatever.
You also have to remember that, and of course, once again, I haven't bought a CD in a very long time, but I'm going to guess if you went to the store and you could actually buy a CD, it's going to be somewhere around 10, 15 bucks, right? That's the monthly subscription rate to Spotify.
Well, do you remember when they shot up from like $10 to $15 CDs at one point?
Oh, and by the way, it actually went up more than that, depending on the CD, because it was all about the artwork and everything. And that's why I like vinyl, because you get the big, huge piece of artwork. You know, you get the colored vinyl, which I know audiophiles are going to say colored vinyl doesn't sound as good as black vinyl and all that. And once again, another rabbit hole.
Black vinyl matters.
But if you look at a piece of vinyl in the way the package is put together, and you're sitting there and you're holding that and you're sitting in your chair and you're, you know, you hear that crackle when you put the needle down and you play the record, that's an experience.
Right.
And it's the same as going to a live music show.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the exact same, but it's as close as you're going to get, because you're having that intimate connection with the music,
right,
versus just having something playing in the background on your phone when you're mowing the grass and you need something to listen to because you hate mowing the grass, because mowing the grass sucks worse than living in Canada.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, you actually kind of stole my thunder and peed over my parade there a little bit, because I was going to say...
Oh, sorry about
pretty,
that.
Pretty much the same thing, but in a different
way. That's
but,
that's what we get for not researching these shows. Yeah.
But, I mean, you are more of an audiophobe than I am, in terms of that, you know, you do value that experience with vinyl, and it is an experience. I don't think anybody could ever really...
Look, let's be honest.
Putting in a CD is an experience.
Right, but going back to, you know, we did a podcast on The Smiths.
Yeah.
And you've been over at my house and sat with my vinyl setup and listened to The Smiths on vinyl, even though you have the Hatful Hollow on vinyl, but for you, you hang it on the wall.
Yeah.
You don't actually listen to the record.
Right.
And I have, I think, four or five Smiths records, and you've sat there and you've even admitted it sounds so much better.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, because I think it's an exact... I think there's something with vinyl. It just brings up the rawness of a band going into the studio and recording it, whereas, you know, I think when it moved to CD, the quality, even though it was, you know, somewhat digital, never really compared to vinyl. And even now, when you download, you know, the different formats of songs, that it never really recreates that connection you have with a band when you listen to it digitally, as opposed to vinyl.
If Gay Asian Disco comes out, are they going to have to release all their music on vinyl?
Well, I don't know if we have the time to put it out on vinyl, to be honest.
That's going to be difficult.
Well, I mean...
Sounds like a lot of work.
Well, I think we're going to have to run another competition with this. And I think if anybody wants to put together any tracks that we can contribute to our new record label for this new genre, and we've decided to call it Gaysian Records, which I think kind of...
Gaysian. Listen to you being creative.
Gaysian Records, right?
Trademark.
Yeah, if they email us at wolfandshepherd@gmail.com, and they send it to us, we will absolutely 100% put it on our Facebook page. And, you know, when we do this album, the freshman release of Now That's What I Call Gaysian Volume 1, it will make the cut.
Yeah, but, so do you realize the amount of work you're creating here? We are so lazy, and now we're going to have to run a record label for Gay Asian Disco.
Well, I was thinking more about the t-shirt sales, because if there's that many Asians in the world, and you take the percentage of how many of them may or may not be gay, I was thinking the merchandise, just like every other band we were talking about the other day, they make the money from touring and merchandise.
And of course,
this is where we're going to make the money.
We're going to create this band that probably can't tour, but we could create the merch for them.
Yeah.
I like the way this is going.
There's got to be a equivalent of a Gay Asian Disco version of John Travolta from Saturday Night Fever out there somewhere, who is going to break through, and we together, you and I, are going to be responsible for making them massive.
That is a lot of responsibility.
It is.
I don't know if I can hold that on my shoulders.
That might be more pressure than we signed up for, to be honest.
That might be bad.
So what's if you had to really push a musical style that you honestly think would be big in 10 years' time, do you think there's anything now whatsoever that will come out of almost nowhere, or do you think genres, new genres, are absolutely dead?
I think they're dead.
You think they're dead? There'll be no more creativity, and it's just a repeat and a rehash of what's come before.
Yep.
And new genres are dead.
I think they're dead.
I agree with you.
I totally think they're dead. It's sad to think about that it's dead.
Yeah.
But I don't see it happening.
Yeah.
You're going to get some wrinkles. You're going to get some cover songs in different genres. I remember watching a video from, I think it was Jimmy Fallon, that was Gwen Stefani playing her songs when she was in No Doubt in a country version. And listening to that, thinking, you know, I remember when Gwen Stefani was in No Doubt, back when I thought she had good music, and listening to her, you know, sing them in a country version.
Yeah.
But we're at the bottom of the barrel. It's kind of like Hollywood with movies, and we keep doing
rehashes. Yeah, remakes.
We keep doing sequels. Yeah. We keep doing all that. The creative people are running out of ideas, and it scares me.
Yeah.
I think we're done. Yeah. I just don't see it going any farther.
I agree with you, and going back to that, one of our very first podcasts when we covered the Smiths and Morrissey, that we talked about, there are so many different versions of early Smith songs, like There Is a Light That Never Goes Out, that it doesn't matter which band sings it, even if you're not necessarily a fan of that band, that song still sounds good. I don't think there's maybe been more than a handful of songs in the last 10 years which different bands could sing which would still sound good. I think music is almost dead in terms of creativity. It's just purely now about the monster machine of marketing and instant money.
It's the hook. It's the short YouTube video. You're going to see shorter songs. It's going to be about the shock value. That's all that's left.
But we are going to make a gay Asian disco version of Baby Shark, though, right?
You know, when we started this podcast, I would have told you that we are not getting in the gay Asian disco business, but maybe it's our responsibility as people that love music that we have to make this happen. It's going to suck. I mean, we're actually going to have to do some work, which probably means we're not going to do it, but we'll at least talk about it for, I don't know, what, 5-10 minutes?
Yeah.
And then decide that it isn't going to happen. But with all that said, thank you for tuning into this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. We certainly appreciate all of y'all's support that y'all have given us, and we'll catch you on the next one.